Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Where To Go. I'm James Atkinson, Senior Brand Manager at DK Eyewitness.
And I'm Lucy Richards, Senior Editor at DK Eyewitness.
And welcome to Where To Go, where every fortnight we find out more about the world's favourite travel destinations with the people who know those places best. And today, we have a returning guest, Lucy.
We do! I'm really looking forward to this one. It's going to be lovely to see our pal, Alan. And we're talking about Denmark. Who doesn't love Denmark?
I know, yeah. I mean, I think I've been watching The Bear recently, and there's an episode set in Copenhagen of that, and it was just bringing back all of my Copenhagen memories from about 2017 or 2018, whenever I went over there.
Yeah, I went in 2017.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think because I just joined DK slightly after that as well. I remember us talking about it. But yeah, it's a wonderful place, and we had Alan on a few years ago to discuss Copenhagen. Mm. Listener, you can find that episode if you go back in time. I remember lots of talk about open water swimming, lots of cycling, quite a lot of foodie chat as well.
Definitely.
And we will definitely be touching on Copenhagen in this episode too, but we're trying to cover the whole of Denmark and give a bit of a picture of the whole country altogether. So a little bit of a challenge.
Definitely. Yep. So many beautiful landscapes, you know, the hygge, the happiness, the outdoor lifestyle. We've got a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, and it is really, truly, to me, it's like kind of where Germanic Europe meets like Scandinavia as well.
Yeah.
And that kind of like blend of influences and stuff. It's almost like the best of Europe, in my view, like Denmark. So
definitely.
I'm very, very excited about this episode. So yeah, let's welcome Alan.
Returning guest and friend of the pod, Alan Matuka-Kortbeck is an award-winning photographer, journalist and marketer based in Copenhagen. So welcome back, Alan. Hello.
Good to see you all.
It's lovely to have you back on the podcast. I think our first full episode returning guest. So welcome back, Alan. As usual, we're going to begin with learning a little bit more about Alan, followed by his all-important recommendations of where to go and insider knowledge of Denmark. Then we'll hear about upcoming events and ways to make the most positive impact when you visit.
Alan, hello, hello. It's lovely to have you back. It's been 2 years since we last had you on the podcast. How's life in Copenhagen treating you?
Yeah, life is good. I'd say it's been a mixed year for me personally. My son was a bit sick and in intensive care at the start of the year, and then I lost my mum later on. And then believe it or not, I also got laid off from my job of 7 years during the summer. But apart from that, there are also some positives, thankfully.
Good.
I'm going to be a dad for the second time in December.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's wonderful news. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so expecting a daughter and that's been the silver lining in it all. So yeah, a bit of a mixed year, but happy to be here.
So you spent your childhood split between Denmark and Kenya.
Yeah.
Whereabouts in Denmark did you grow up?
I would come to visit my aunt, and my aunt lives in a neighborhood called Frederiksberg here in Copenhagen, where I am. It's on the edge of Frederiksberg, another neighborhood called Valbu. So literally her house or her row of flats is the last thing in between the two neighborhoods. Of course, she'd prefer to live on the Frederiksberg side and says that she comes from Frederiksberg. So Frederiksberg is a bit more, how do you say, It's a bit more of it's a posher area of Copenhagen, let's say.
Yeah. Mm. I know so many people in London who pretend that they live in one place and they actually live in another.
Exactly. So, you know, her neighborhood is not exactly the posh end, let's just say. But, you know, for her sake, let's say she lives in Frederiksberg. So, yeah, it's quite a beautiful area, sort of area that she's from and where I sort of grew up. And I'd come there during the summer, which is a beautiful time of year. We've got long days. The sun is out until very late. And my memories from there are mostly centered around running around a beautiful lake called Damhusern. So there's a 3 to 5 kilometer run around that lake. It's quite beautiful. And there's lots of swans on there. There's quite a few football fields as well. And I'd play there quite often. And I also remember coming back from nights out when I was old enough. And walking from a station called Flindholm and basically walking for about, say, 2 kilometers through all these small summer houses, or, you know, these garden houses where everybody goes during the summer. It was pitch dark and I'd walk in there at night to get back home if I'd missed the bus or the train or whatever. So, yeah, it's quite a nice neighborhood. I also remember taking the bus into town. The bus drove along a street called Vesterbrogel, which is the street that goes through Vesterbro, the edge of Vesterbro. Yeah. And that was always very interesting just to see how the town changed. So coming from Roskildevej, which is where my aunt lives, up the hill towards the zoo, and then down the hill. It's the only significant hill, or the only thing that can be defined as a hill in Copenhagen, but I'm sure other people might have their own definition.
I was about to say Copenhagen is very, very flat in my memory.
Yeah, there's one hill and that's it, literally. Up towards the zoo and then down it. It's quite fun if you do it by bike. And yeah, it's just a scenic bus ride into town and back from town. That's what I remember most from growing up there.
Wow. Lovely. I love that nostalgic snapshot, Alan. Thank you. We're going to be attempting to cover the whole of Denmark in this episode, which obviously is hugely ambitious. But could you give us a short summary of what you love most about the country?
Yeah, most of. So, I mean, top of the list, I think, how honest people are. So a good example of this is the other day I was out biking and I dropped my credit card. And I obviously didn't realize this until I came home and somebody had written me a Facebook message, somebody I didn't know. And he said, hey, look, I have your credit card. We'll stay parked here because it was around this dam that goes around Amager, which is part of Copenhagen. And he says, yeah, you know, we'll stay here for the next 2 hours if you want to come and pick it up. So they're working on this pump house, basically. And of course, I rode out there and picked up my card and had a really good conversation, learned a bit more about this pump house that keeps the city from flooding, apparently.
Oh, wow.
And these two gentlemen that were repairing it. And that's just one example of how, you know, people come to your aid at a moment when you need it, which is, it's just nice to walk around like that and know that, you know, if anything happens, you're in a dependable place and people will come to your aid. Another good example that sort of illustrates that is all the unmanned strawberry, honey, local produce stands that we have, particularly in the countryside during the summer in particular. And it's kind of, you drop in, you pay for what you need and you leave. In principle, you could just take everything and not pay, but nobody does that, right? So I think that's just thinking about how many places in the world where it's actually possible to do that. That's something that really strikes through for me about Denmark. Of course, in Copenhagen, it's a bit different. But out in the countryside, it's always one of the things that I think is great. There's also very many people that live out in the countryside that never lock their doors. Their houses are permanently open, so there's a lot of trust in that sense in society, and that's great. Moving on to other things, I'm a massive fan of the way Denmark is made for those sunny days of the spring and the summer. Everything just seems to align in picture perfect harmony. It kind of looks like a Wes Anderson film just turned up with a bit more saturation and contrast. And I suppose the fact that there's so much rain, wind and everything in between the rest of the year just means that whenever there's sunshine, people just really appreciate that, which is great to have that sense of collective appreciation. I've never been anywhere that that people really like get out in earnest and really just enjoy themselves as if it's the last day that they have the chance to do that. Yeah, lastly, I think this deserves a special mention from my own point of view. So the northwest coast is fantastic. So that's the northwest coast of Jutland. Mm-hmm. It's very rugged. It's got some of the best surf waves anywhere in the world. So I love to surf. And that's actually where I've I've learned to surf over the years. It's very dependent all year round, so the swell comes in and it's very regular. So you can be a beginner, you can be advanced, you can be a pro even, and find something for everyone. It's got a rich fishing heritage, sandy beaches, there's jagged beaches as well, which is very rare in Denmark. And there's even a special combination of colours, especially during the spring. So this is something that the Skagen painters, you might have heard of them, kind of reference through their work. They reference this sort of amber kind of glow. And it's one of those things you kind of have to see to believe. It's best, in my opinion, I think, around May, June, when the sun's just setting low in the sky and on an evening. It's a very special atmosphere and a special place. So that, I feel that deserves a special mention above other things in Denmark at this stage already.
Absolutely. Well, let's get on with finding out some of your best things to do. Alan, to kick things off, we're going to ask you to give us a quickfire tour of Denmark. We're going to name a few categories and you have to suggest just one thing to do. Are you ready?
I am.
Excellent. So we're going to kick off with your favourite view.
There's quite a few. If I had to select one, it would have to be... there's this little village called Lundstrup. It's in the northwest of Denmark, so the shoreline that I talked about before. And I think it's one of those places that you have to be at the top of the cliff, of course, but also go down to the sea as well. It's not that far, but it's quite a steep elevation. Just to sort of gain an appreciation of the magnitude of the landscape here, I'd say the closest the UK comes to this is somewhere like Cornwall, where you have all these sort of cliffs that meet the sea.
Yep.
The colours there are brilliant. It's a place where there's lots of soil erosion, so the clay cliffs sort of like melt away into the ocean. They have a bit of an issue with people's houses, sort of like over time just sliding into the ocean. But as you can imagine, this creates a really dramatic and beautiful landscape any time of year. I've been there in the winter a few years ago during Corona when you literally couldn't go anywhere else. And it was fantastic being there for New Year's. Great light, great colours, the ocean down below, yeah. Everything that you sort of need from a view.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. Excellent answer. I have high hopes for this one, Alan. Your favourite thing to eat?
Yeah, I sort of went back and forth with this one, but I sort of settled on something that's called a stjerneskud. So a stjerneskud translates to like a star, asteroid, storm kind of thing. There's not really a translation that sort of carries across, but it's basically sole fillets, so fish fillet on white bread, the cheapest white bread that you can find. And then you add asparagus, mayo, shrimps, a bit of caviar, a small leaf of lettuce and a squeeze of lemon. Mm. And it's best served with white wine. It's quite a sizable portion, I'd say. It's something that I eat a lot of when I'm, for example, surfing. After surfing, that's one of my preferred meals. So yeah, it's great to have it on the villages of Vorpura or Klipmüller. It's called Hawaii, as we call it. But the best place to have one, if you're looking for like the one place, is this place called Biestel Kro, which is a pretty random bread and breakfast, this kind of inn sort of thing, pretty much in the middle of nowhere in northern Jutland. I think, I don't know what the chef does there, but it's fantastic each time.
Oh, wow.
Great.
Definitely worth a visit for sure.
Yeah.
And on a similar theme, your favourite thing to drink?
I'd say it's a bit of an opinion divider, I think, but something like schnapps, just because you drink it, I mean, if you're a normal person, you drink it like only at Christmas time. I'd be worried if you were drinking it like all year round. I really feel that it sort of lightens this sort of heavy atmosphere. And there's always this smell of like, you know, ham or saturated fat that just sort of like permeates every Christmas dinner kind of thing. And there's the whole sort of like nerves and sort of like, okay, now it's Christmas. Now we're all sitting down and we're going to have our Christmas dinner. And the schnapps kind of lightens the atmosphere very effectively.
Sold.
I can very much see that. I will be trying that this Christmas, for sure.
How about then your favourite day activity?
Well, I'm biased with this one, I think, surfing in my case, but it's run pretty close by sort of running, again, any time of year. Immersing yourself in the Danish weather in some way or form, whether you're in the ocean or whether you're running through torrential rain.
Excellent. I know we have a question coming up about that as well, so I won't push you too much further. And finally, and this is a very, very good quickfire round. You're doing really well, Alan. Your favourite museum or gallery?
So most people would say Louisiana. I think Louisiana is a little bit overrated, and I've been there quite a few times for my liking. So I'd say that Wardrobe Go would be up there. I don't know why it took me so long to go there. It's kind of like one of those underrated destinations, but then again, you wonder why, because it's, I mean, part of it is designed by the late Dame Zaha Hadid, famous mm-hmm, architect. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic, fantastic place. It's got a great outdoor park with very, very many interesting sculptures, some of them permanent, some less so. Last time I was there, we found this bamboo house, and it wasn't even a house, it was just a bamboo structure. Very difficult to describe, but there was a path in it all the way up to the top, and you come up about 8 to 10 meters. So obviously I was there with my family, and my boy found it really interesting just to go up into this treehouse, and it did really feel like a treehouse in the middle of a forest.
Wow.
We kept on thinking it was going to fall down, and because it was just, you know, strung together quite flimsily, but obviously very secure because it's bamboo. And so I found that very, very interesting, and just very, I mean, you know, most modern museums or museums won't even have the remit to do that. But at Wardrobe Go, they're very experimental, and they can get away with lots of interesting things.
Awesome. Great answers. And passing the quick fire round with flying colours, I think.
Great.
I know listeners will really want to know, Alan, your highlights for what to visit, what not to miss in Denmark. So what are kind of your sort of must-see highlights?
So bear with me on this one, because there are quite a few. So I'd say it depends where in Denmark you're at and what you're into, but I've selected a few of my own, or a few of the ones that I think are quite interesting for listeners. So if you're in Zealand, that's where I am. That's where Copenhagen is. I mean, the Tivoli Gardens are a must, for sure.
Absolutely.
Very picturesque, winter wonderland, fairy tales, that sort of thing. You kind of have to see it to believe it. It's also in the middle of the city. It's 10 minutes away from here. But it's basically an entirely new world. And any time of year, whether it's Halloween or whether it's Christmas or whether it's spring or summer, there's just always something to do and to immerse yourself in there. I know I slighted it before, but Louisiana Museum of Modern Art, definitely. And do yourself a favor of having something to compare with as well. So go to ARCIT as well. So the ARC, that's in a different part of town. Not necessarily known for its museums, but ARCIL was built there, and it's, you know, simultaneously very random, but also very intricate. The building itself is quite interesting. And they've had lots of interesting exhibitions there over the years. Definitely, again, if you're in Copenhagen, go for a waterfront stroll and a dip. I'd say that's like the obligatory thing that you have to do. I'd say you probably start around the Danish Architecture Center. You should also check out the Isle of Refselund. So particularly if you come in the summer, there's lots of festivals like Copenhagen that take place out there. And it's a very unique landscape. They haven't started developing it en masse yet. But who's to say that in 50 years it's going to be the case? So see it while you can. Again, on Zealand, go up north, go to the woods. Gribskov is a huge wood. And the town of Tisvilde, which is, actually not so far from Gribskov as well. That's wonderful coastal destination just to visit. If you're on Bornholm, which is not so far from Copenhagen, so I definitely suggest that people should take the short ferry trip over. The Hammerhus ruins are particularly interesting, especially in the autumn, where if you ascend the ruins, basically you look out on this wonderful view of all the foliage. It's quite beautiful at that point. There's a wood that surrounds it. Also on Bornholm, I think you definitely want to have a good meal of fish at a smokehouse. And there's also this place called Kultippen Hesle, which is a former coal tip or pit. And it's basically now, like, all the coal mining has stopped, and there's all these mounds there that have created a sort of desert landscape that just drops wonderfully into the sea. So that's Bornholm. If you're on the island of Fyn, which is, for avid listeners, the island of Hans Christian Andersen,
okay,
then there's a castle called Isgård Castle, which is as fairy tale a castle as they come. And there's also a great festival there during the spring. It's called Heartland. Let's say if you're in the UK and you're a Guardian reader, then you'd go to that kind of festival, if you know what I mean.
Okay, right. I see.
But it's a fun. It's like the music lineup is interesting because it's different to a lot of the other festivals. And, you know, the setting, of course, you can't beat that setting. And they have some talks as well over and beyond the festival itself. So quite an interesting thing to check out if you're on the island of Fyn. And then to Jutland, so the hinterland, basically. Yep. I'm going to give you a tip from the island of Mors. So Mors is a very isolated place because it's literally an island in a fjord. basically. So it's an island surrounded by water, and then there's land around that water. So pretty isolated, pretty unique. It's actually where my mum came from.
Oh, wow.
And there's this place called Hanklit, which is a wonderful cliff. I'm not quite sure if it's made of limestone or what it's made out of, but it's quite spectacular, especially in a Danish sense. We're not known for our spectacular or rugged landscapes per se, but this is one exception to that. Cold Hawaii, obviously, I've mentioned this quite a few times. So these are the towns of Waipua, Klipmula, Hanstholm. There's lots of places to surf there and to check out. The landscape itself is also quite interesting, and in a way also similar, ironically enough, similar to Hawaii, the actual island of Hawaii, when you drive by, because you've got a lot of, what do you call it, heather and sort of like low shrubbery that just sort of breezes by your window when you're driving past, which is not dissimilar to when you're driving in Hawaii, and there's like all this short grass that grows in the volcanic ash there. Fish and chips when you're out in that region, for sure. You need to try that. That's, again, one of the favorite meals. There's a place called Torpstrand, where I'd say the fish and chips is as good as they come. So, yeah, you Brits should definitely go over there, and I'm sure you'd find something very tasty on your platter. Close by as well. So all these places I'm mentioning on Jutland are pretty close by. The Vixu Battery, which is basically a series of bunkers that have now, some of them washed into the sea and some of them are still left. There, it's quite actually, it's nice to see the sort of, well, not nice, but you can appreciate the scale of what this complex was back during the war, and now it's just interesting to see all these concrete structures that have just been eroded over the years. There's also a bunker museum if you want to brush up on your history. The Cliffs of Bulberg as well. That's quite an interesting point to check out. If you're lucky, you can maybe see all the way to Norway.
Wow.
This is a very nice limestone cliff, particularly nice to visit during the sunset. And if it's a nice day in the sea, then you can also stand up paddle around there as well. It's quite a rugged and dramatic landscape, a good drop down to the sea as well. Moving further south, Aarhus is definitely a must-see, I'd say, as well. It's the second city in Copenhagen, but it's got its very own unique identity. A lot of quaint streets. It's also got, there's a very nice natural area sort of outside of Aarhus called Molsbjerg. And if you're very lucky there, you'll spot wild horses. Very, very lucky, I'd say, because I've been there many times. I haven't seen them, but it's also a very large area. Further south even, there's this place called Vejle. And Vejle has a fjord and a very beautiful valley that sort of cuts through that. It's quite beautiful. Further west of that, you've got Billund and Legoland. That's a must-see for obvious reasons. It's part of Denmark's heritage, and I think the Lego folk have a Lego house that I have yet to see. It's quite interesting. I've seen a lot of pictures on Instagram of it, so it's on my list.
I was going to say, with a young son, you have to go there at some point, right?
Yeah, I do have to go there. It's just a bit far away, so like, unless you work for Lego, like, you probably won't go to Billund, but it's still a nice area to sort of explore. And then further down south, even, you've got this island called Rømø, where, I don't know if anybody's seeing, but, you know, Visit Denmark and a lot of the places advertise these beach buggies with a sail on them. So the wind there really just kicks in, and like, they tie sails onto buggies, and those buggies get thrown across the sea and the ocean and the beach at quite an astounding pace. It's quite fun.
Okay.
Not for the faint-hearted.
Yes.
I hasten to add.
Amazing. I mean, Alan, I think that was just, we sometimes, like, on these sort of country episodes, we struggle to get all of the kind of information in and all of the representation across the whole country as well, but that was a quite a remarkable snapshot of Denmark, I thought.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. I left a lot of things out.
So I'm just going to delve a little bit further into, I mean, I know you're really, really big on your outdoor activities. You've already mentioned surfing. I know you're a big runner, cyclist, and swimmer as well. And I think on the Copenhagen episode from a couple of years ago, you talked about, you know, taking freezing dips, early morning freezing dips, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to see sort of like, in terms of the range of outdoor activities available in Denmark, can you tell us about some of the best ones?
Yeah. I mean, there's absolutely almost nothing that you can't do, like, under the sun in Denmark. Or I say under the sun. That's a bit of a misnomer, because there is no sun for most of the year. But so running is obviously one of them. And everywhere you look in Copenhagen or in the cities or in the countryside, a lot of people run on a daily basis, others on a bi-weekly basis, whatever. It's a very popular sport.
The Copenhagen Marathon is a really big one as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Both the half and the Copenhagen Marathon itself. And there's also lots of smaller runs. It's quite popular, particularly for sort of people in their 40s in a midlife crisis or whatever. They just take up running. All of a sudden they find out they're really good. Who knew? No, running is definitely very popular. You'll find lots of running clubs as well if you don't want to run alone. I personally run alone and I find it very soulful. I like to listen to lots of podcasts like this one, for example, when I'm on my runs.
Hello to all the runners listening to us right now.
Yeah, very good running material. Increasingly popular of late is stand-up paddle. This is a sport that everybody can do. I don't know if you really define it as a sport. But anyway, it's something that you can really easily do, and a lot of people actually have taken that up. You have quite a few inflatable stand-up paddle rafts, or whatever you want to call them, that are sold from supermarkets. So it's quite easy to have one in your basement and just take it out and explore the city, for example, explore Copenhagen on a stand-up paddle board. That's quite interesting. Oh, wow. One thing to remember, though, is that you need a life jacket, because otherwise you going to get a fine if the police catch you.
Good to know.
So you might look silly in the life jacket and you might not need it. But it's one of those things that does catch quite a few people out. Mm-hmm. Biking is also very popular, obviously. So obviously, Denmark is a country that has a strong bike culture. But by bike culture, I also mean like racing bikes. And that's obviously not... Yeah, it's something that's been really heightened by Jonas Vingegaard winning the Tour de France back to back. So there's quite a few people that have... taking that up. Obviously, taking a dip, going back to what you were saying, that's very popular. I don't know if maybe the popularity is waning now a little bit, that people have discovered just how much more freedom they have now that the world is open again and it's not a cool corona thing anymore. But yeah, take a dip any time of year. A lot of people do it, particularly in the winter. I try to do it as consistently as possible. There's good spots in the city, places like La Banchina or Bullion, Islandsbrygge, Valbystrand, and there's actually a new bathing spot out towards the dam around Amager. So they're trying to move people away from the city and towards this place, and it's quite interesting, actually. I find it interesting to see all the initiatives that they're the commune or the city council has when it comes to actually encouraging people to take advantage of the sea, the surrounding sea.
Wonderful.
Great.
Finally, I'm conscious of time. I'm just going to ask you for one best kept secret in Denmark that you'd be willing to share.
So there's an island called Anholt, and it's not that far from Roskilde. And it's not well known at all. A lot of people travel to the islands during the summer, but I'd say this one is the one that's still kind of a well kept secret. Mm-hmm. Can't think why, to be honest, because it's really nice. It's really unique. It's got a very... unique landscape on part of it. So they call it the desert, where there's not much that grows there for whatever reason. I think something to do with the soil, because obviously it rains as much there as it rains everywhere else in Denmark. But the soil here is particular, or there's something that makes this landscape quite unique in a Danish context. And it's 30 to 45 minutes by plane from Roskilde. And the plane that you travel in is essentially an old propeller plane. So you sit next to the pilot and you can, press one of the buttons that doesn't make the plane crash, maybe, if you speak to the pilot nicely. So it's quite a nice experience. Ideal for families as well. I have friends that have flown there as well. And obviously the kids have loved sitting in this loud propeller aeroplane that you can't hear yourself thinking.
I can imagine. Yeah.
And it's just a nice quiet place to escape for a few days. Yeah, I'd say that would be my one hidden gem if I had to boil it down.
Excellent.
Great. Whether you want to trace the fearsome Viking Empire, sample cutting-edge cuisine in Copenhagen, or discover Skagen's wild, windswept beaches, your DK Eyewitness Denmark helps you plan the perfect adventure. Get your copy in all good bookstores or at the link in the episode bio.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Alan, we're approaching the autumn-winter season. What's Denmark like during this time? I imagine this might be when the concept of hygge comes into play.
Hygge. Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Forgive my terrible...
You know what? No, there's people who have lived here for 20 years and they still can't say it, so it's fine. It's all good. Yeah, it's approaching. I mean, late summer's coming up, so, you know, if you're into all-round bathing, so like jumping into the water all times of the year, this is a really good time to actually get started if you've never actually done it before. So it's very foggy in September in the morning. It's a fantastic time to wake up if you're into photography as well. That's also nice. And you can just sort of like slide into the water. And sometimes the water is still warm. Sometimes it's a little bit chillier. But there's a very unique sort of ghostly feel about bathing at that time of the year. If you're lucky as well, it's sunny and you can enjoy the sun as well. Surfing is a great time for it in the summer. You can still surf in without, you know, looking like an astronaut and putting 10 layers on. You might need one or two layers, but, you know, not the full metal jacket, as I like to call it. And yeah, I think hygge mode kind of gets built up towards November. There's a very interesting crescendo of how like things slowly start to go indoors and become very indoorsy. So the power of the indoors is there to be harnessed, because it's very unpleasant outside. It gets dark really early. I'm not selling anything really well, but indoors. Yeah, indoors it's nice and cozy, and you know, you can build Legos, and if you have young children, it's just nice to get all artsy and, you know, do all these activity kits that they love doing. Drink mulled wine, make Christmas decorations. I'd say everything from Halloween. So like Halloween has become massive over the last few years. Mm. We'll come on to that in a sec. But that's one of the things that you can sort of like prep for indoors and really like get into the hygge spirit. And then there's this sort of week or two when the colors sort of peak. So if you're into photography, it's a wonderful time just to go out there and take some good pictures. It's very cold, so you probably need gloves. It's very chilly, kind of cold, and probably windy as well. But yeah, the foliage is always really, really remarkable, I find. All sorts of colors, primary colors. One good place is Vestakyrgo, which is the graveyard close by here. Gribskov and other forests as well, quite good for this. So yeah, get out there as well in amongst all the hugely things that you're doing in the autumn.
Cool. You mentioned Halloween. Can you tell us about some of the events to mark on the end of, so I guess the end of 2023 and then 2024?
Yeah, so Halloween is going to be big again this year. And it's one of those things that I don't really know like when the official date actually is here, because some people start it earlier and some people do it on the 31st of October. The supermarkets already start in September. You know, trying to get people to buy stuff. Mm-hmm. And people do buy all sorts of things, and like, because there's not that many things to do outdoors, what we were saying before, everybody just goes crazy and buys lots of Halloween decorations, especially if you have small kids. So there's all these Halloween themed events in the woods. So in the northwest of Denmark, it's a particularly good place to go for Halloween events of that sort. I went on one last year, which was there were things I had to opt out of. Let's just say they were like, okay, my son is three, maybe he shouldn't, like, you know, it was a bit too much, you know. But rather that you have that option when you're already in there, I thought it was quite interesting. So you go on all these trails, dimly lit and so on, and it's a wonderful experience, and it's fun for the kids. And there's also a house in a town called Smørum, which is not so far from Copenhagen. And this place just goes absolutely crazy. It's a family that live there, and they just go completely rogue during Halloween. And I don't know how much money they spend on the decorations, but they have an open event where people can come into this haunted house, in quotes, and check it out. And yeah, I mean, there's a family that lives there every day, but you wouldn't know that looking at all the videos that sort of emanate from there. So that is an event in itself. Earlier on in October, you have Culture Night. So that's the night where I really feel personally that this should be spread over like a week or 2 weeks. So it's the night when all the cultural institutions in the city are free to visit. So you have like a culture pass for the night. And they often stage very unique exhibitions, if it's an art gallery or whatever, or even swimming pools or whatever, like it's sponsored by the council. There's so much to see and do. So be strategic and pick what, like 5 or 6 things, because you're never going to be able to see all the things in the city. But you will see some very unique things in the city on this particular night. It's also a night where you probably won't be out anyway, because it's just really cold and awful around the 2nd of October in the evening.
How cold does it get around then?
So it's not really it's more like the chill factor, if you know what I mean. So it's cold. It's like maybe 5 degrees around that. But it's more the wind and the darkness, because right now during the summer, like it gets dark around 9 or 10 in the evening, right? And it gets light like 4, 3 sometimes if at the peak, right? So you have so much light, even if it's raining, and you're just used to that. It's lovely. And then all of a sudden it's shorter and shorter. And then November, you also lose an hour.
Yeah.
Because of daylight savings time. Don't know why they call it daylight savings. I don't see what they save, what it saves anybody. But it's a very abrupt sort of like, okay, now it's dark. Get used to it sort of thing, where it gets light at like 9, gets dark at like 3 maybe. So there's really not that long to sort of like enjoy the day, right? And it's pitch dark by like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
Very similar to here. There's something quite nice when it turns, and then after you've had like that for months on end, it starts to kind of get to you a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This season on the podcast, we're kind of putting special attention on how listeners can support local communities while traveling. Obviously, Alan, you've written for Copenhagen Like a Local a couple of years back, which is all about supporting locals and their businesses, etc. But what kind of things can travelers think about to ensure they're supporting local communities when they're visiting Denmark?
So as you said, I think it's a very good idea to read up on what you're visiting beforehand. I mean, we should be the most literate generation of our time. And it's very easy to access information if you don't have a book, such as the one you just described. Very good book. Very good series.
It's pretty decent, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. Like it is. Absolutely. But, if you don't have that handy, you know, go to Instagram and just look up. I do this a lot myself if I'm looking for a hotel or if I'm looking for things to see and do. And just go on Instagram and find some hashtags that sort of correspond to what you're looking for in that area. And even, you know, find some that also tie into localhood, maybe some that are not necessarily made by tourists, but are actually made by people. Just do a bit of research beforehand, because I think that's the best way of sort of seeing what it is you're actually going into, and not reading some sort of like third party, even if it's a TripAdvisor review. But the best way is to kind of like discern that information from yourself by what this place is putting out there, if it is even out on Instagram, for example. Another good thing to do is write them. So if it's a little hot dog shop or whatever that you're going to, just write them on Instagram beforehand with an interesting question that you can ask them before your trip, because that kind of gets the conversation started. And it means that you visit the place already knowing what it is, knowing that you're supporting a local person or community, and you can sort of like break the ice because you're showing your interest, and you can have an experience that's perhaps different to the experience that the other guests are having there if they're just coming in. And, you know, it could be there or it could be anywhere that they're going. So yeah, I'd say just research what you're visiting and you know, try to support things that are local, try to support things that are sustainable, try to filter through all the noise of the ones that are saying that they are sustainable, but are they really? And also do a bit of experimentation as well, like try out different things in the area that you're staying in. Some will be more sustainable than others. The ones that are good and the ones that fit that bill, maybe you might want to think about going back to visit.
I mean, you mentioned Instagram there as well, and I think, is there a flip side to that as well? When you go to these small businesses like your hot dog stand and stuff, it's not necessarily about TripAdvisor reviews, etc., but actually just going out there, promoting it, tell it word of mouth, spreading it on social media, etc., and really shouting about exciting local places that people wouldn't have heard of before, and giving alternatives.
Yeah, I think there's a flip side. I think there needs to be such respect for these sorts of places as well. You know, I mean, the example I always cite is like when you go to Bali, and you know, you all see these pictures of Bali, right? But you never see sort of like the queues and like the haggling that goes on. There's wedding photographers, there's influencers, there's tourists just crowding for this view. So I'd say, like, if you do tell a story, perhaps also tell the other side of the story. It's very easy to make a carousel where you depict these things. I think that story needs to be told as well, because otherwise we're just living in some sort of like unfiltered reality. Things are not like that in reality, right? So
yeah.
Same time, like have a bit of respect for the different places that you visit. I'm saying this as well, because I also perhaps need to get better at it myself. But it's just over time, I think you find out like what sort of a tone and the sort of approach that you need to have when it comes to how you promote yourself and also how you promote the places that you're visiting, right? It is a bit of a science in itself, which is quite weird, and it's probably not the one that the algorithm thinks performs best or whatever. But at a certain point, you also need to decide, I guess, if you're into that sort of thing, is, you know, am I living off my likes and sort of like getting super happy because of them, or, you know, would I rather provide information and have less people read it, but it's more consistent with my values and who I am,
yeah,
and what I'd like to convey.
That's a really good point. Similar to what you said with Bali, I remember going to Santorini in Greece. We're obviously talking about Denmark here. We should talk about Denmark. But yeah, just seeing like the queues, you know, the classic pictures of the caldera there, and like seeing queues of people like kind of like actually just waiting to pose to take pictures there. And it's just bizarre. Whereas you walk a bit further down the street, you find local restaurants and stuff that are completely empty and amazing. Yeah. Definitely some food for thought.
You do have that in Copenhagen as well. I mean, now that, you know, tourism is booming again, which is good. But for instance, go down to the waterfront and everybody has their camera out, you know? They're meandering because that's what people do when they have their cameras, right? So they're like sort of like zigzagging across the road. And in some cases you want to say, okay, maybe take 5 photos and don't take 100, you know, like, just also for yourself, just like filter out what's important, what's remarkable and all that.
Yeah. Think about the interesting narrative and going beyond that and what you would find interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a wise words. So thanks so much for just giving us that wonderful snapshot of Denmark. I'm sure we could have fit even more into this.
Definitely.
But yeah, I'd love to come back and visit one day, and hopefully we shall see you there.
Definitely. Anytime you're here, just contact me. I'll be happy to show you around. I will probably still live here in Vesterbro, which is 10 minutes from the city centre. So
fantastic. Thank you so much, Alan. It's been wonderful to catch up. How nice is that, Lucy, having Alan back on the podcast?
So nice. Yeah, just visiting an old friend, isn't it?
Listeners, when we do these podcast episodes, it's really, really lovely to have a big chat with lots of our sort of guests, and we continue that chat afterwards. I mean, lots of these people you talk to, Lucy, anyway, editing books and so on. But yeah, it's just so nice to check in.
Yeah, I know. It was lovely to see Alan. Big, big thank you to him for joining us.
Absolutely. So, listener, if you want to follow Alan's work, you can find him at kortbeektravels.com. That's KORTBAEK travels.com. Yeah, so we'll be back very, very soon. I don't know if we know where we're going next.
I think we do. It'll be a surprise for everyone.
So wherever we go, that is going to be in a fortnight's time. So listener, we shall see you then. And it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And we shall see you very soon. Where to Go is a podcast from DK Eyewitness. It was produced by Julia Baker, presented by Lucy Richards and James Atkinson, with the help of Bella Talbot. For more information about DK Eyewitness, follow us on social media at DK Eyewitness or visit dk.com/eyewitness. And please like and follow the show. And if you have time, leave a review. Your support means so much to us.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcasts. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.